What's up, everybody? Welcome back to a brand new episode of Life After High School, the number one resource podcast in the entire world. I wouldn't say this to you guys if it was not purely factual. Brought to you by me, Glenn YG. I am your host and the man behind the microphone. Each week, we look to drop a new episode, so make sure you guys subscribe on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast from. Don't forget to also follow the podcast on social media at Life After High School 1. We've got a killer episode for you guys this week, so without further ado, let's dive right into it. Cue that intro, baby.
It's the Life After High School podcast.
Good to go? Sweet. So, first and foremost, I want to thank both you guys for your time today, chatting with me. I know I've had both you guys on the show. And I've met you guys a few years ago, but I kind of want to dive into that and why we're here a little bit. So a few years ago, I remember being invited to go work out at the track at the university here. And our mutual friend brought a friend of his, which is you know, tatted up doing backflips, sprinting down the line with us. So that was a lot of fun. And then, so having met you and chatting with you a few times before, I was like, oh, we should do a show. Like, I want to hear more about you and stuff like that, you know, learn, like, connect that way. That's kind of just how I make friends as an adult. So
great thing.
That's a great thing. Yeah, I mean, seems to work. So usually, but, what ended up happening was, on the show, you introduced me, Zach, to an event called Five Cent City.
Yep.
And it would have been the third year of the five that it'd be put on. So with that being said, I showed up, you know, support you, support a few others participating and helping out. And so I was like, all right, you know, we'll see. You know, I was really, really intrigued. And then listening to the speakers, one of them stood out more than any of them, which was you.
Appreciate that.
Right. And my cousin was telling me about it. You know, I met you briefly and then he was like, hey man, like, you got to reach out to this guy. I got him on the show. And so I talked to Zach about you, and I talked to a few others about, okay, what's the best way that we can go about, like, meeting you? And then, lo and behold, you end up showing up at the same time that we had scheduled the episode, and it all worked out really well. And then, you know, you moved in with me, we all got to kind of support each other throughout, have a, you know, all gel and connect really well. And throughout the last year or 2 years since meeting you guys and being introduced to you, I've never heard of anybody whose story is more powerful than yours and what you've gone through. And I'm sure Zach could attest to that as well.
100%. Appreciate that.
And I've never heard anybody dive in and talk about and articulate better how to kind of go through trials and tribulations in your life and deal with mental health struggles and issues and stuff like that than you, Zach. And I've told you guys a few times that's kind of why I wanted to bring this together. So with that kind of being said, as we get into it, I kind of want to talk about overcoming a bit of, like, adversity in your lives and stuff like that, and we can get into that as we go. But in regards to mental health and as it pertains to men, why we're here,
yep,
what we all are, you know, that's...
I knew there was going to be something said.
Zach can start then. Talk to me, dude, about your first kind of encounter with like mental health or depression or anxiety, stuff like that.
Yeah, so I think people see mental health as like this. It's actually funny. I was at a workshop just the other weekend, and they were still talking about mental health as being like it's purely just a chemical imbalance. There's still this like narrative going on that mental health is purely just it's a chemical imbalance in your brain, and you know, it's just if they're off, they're off, and you take your drugs and you move on with your life, and sometimes the drugs don't work out and that just sucks and you're just shit out of luck.
Just how it goes.
Yeah, and it's crazy that that's still like a narrative that's kind of being passed around. But to me, like, mental health is like, it's no different than your regular health. It's no different than a muscle. It's no different than your digestive system. If you introduce something to your mental that it is not used to handling or is beyond its capacity to handle, you will have an impact, which can then cause long-term chronic pain. It's just that long-term chronic pain can end up being long-term chronic pain of your brain. And just like people that walk around with back pain and have no idea what to do about it, or they just go see, you know, the same massage therapist for 5 years and still feel like shit, or they might go see, you know, then maybe they don't do anything about it. Maybe they just decide that because they're back, or if they're going to sit on the couch for days on end or weeks and months and years, because it hurts too much to do anything, right? That chronic pain ends up becoming debilitating. And mental health is no different. It's you can get hit with something, and if you're not used to having to deal with it, or if you're not used to understanding the skill and the ability to be able to overcome adversities up here, just like you would in your body through a workout, or you would through your digestive system through introducing different kinds of foods, you're going to struggle. And I think that that narrative of like just being this like thing that some people just have or don't have is bullshit, because everyone has it, and everyone at some point in their life is going to be hit with adversity that they are not ready for. And there's going to only be two options, which is going to be to work to adapt and overcome that adversity to the best of your abilities, which is never going to be perfect, or you allow it to win. And for myself, like I had a fairly like decent sheltered life up until I was about 20 years old. And I know I told the story on your podcast. I've said it a couple times before, but my life was pretty normal, relatively speaking, but I had a lot of hints and little clues, which I think just like any physical illness, mental illness always has these little clues and these little warning shots that if you don't know how to look for them, or if you don't know what they are, you'll just see them as like a thing or just some weird thing that's passing by. I had a lot of people in my family that, you know, we weren't really allowed to talk to. I had a lot of people in my family that, you know, my parents just passed off as being like, they're not well, or they're just kind of crazy, or they're just angry. And then there's these habits, and then there are these little things that my mom would do when I was growing up, where I would see her have these, be just devastated and so sad and so upset over things that I just never understood why they were such a big deal, right? As a kid. And you know, but you don't know any better, so you just go on with your life until one day you, in my case, I was 20 years old and I got home and my mom was supposed to be at her workout. She was going to go do a little Zumba with the girls. And I got a call from my dad because he was asking me where my mom was, because she hadn't showed up for her Zumba class, and he had asked me, you know, hey, can you just go check on her? Like, I don't know where she's at. Her phone must be dead. And when I went into the basement where my parents' room was, I went, walked down the stairs, I opened the door, and, you know, my parents' room was fairly long. So when you open the door, I kind of looked from the left side of the room, and I was on the phone with my dad, and I was like, nah, she's out, she's not here. And as I turned to go close the door, and I panned to the right side of my parents' bedroom, is when I found my mom hanging. And at that point, you know, being 20 years old, having no idea what suicide even really was, other than like this weird thing that people talked about, or you heard in movies, but you just kind of thought like, you know, I'm kind of similar to, I'm sure what Michael went through, was like, oh, people get sick or get cancer, that would never be me.
It's so far away.
It's so far away. You're so removed from it. So, you know, I turn around, I see my mom hanging, just dangling from the ceiling. And then, you know, so obviously you panic, you freak out. And I remember when it hit me, like the reality of it is when I had to get a knife and I had to run up and I had to try to cut her down, hoping that I had like just caught her in time, right? Like maybe she could be resuscitated. I could do CPR and she'd start breathing again and realize like, oh, you know, oops, bad slip. So I ran over, grabbed her, picked her up. And as I cut the rope, and her entire body just dropped. And, you know, when people talk about, like, dead weight, like, unless you've ever really felt it, you don't understand what it's truly like. And it's, like, in that moment, like, my world was shattered, because it was, like, this was my mom, who was, like, my rock. She was the one who protected me from everything. She was the one who, like, hid the world from me to try to protect me. And that, for me, was the first time I had been really, really hit with an inescapable adversity that I had to either overcome or use as an excuse to be miserable for the rest of my life. And it would have been a fucking pretty good excuse.
Oh, absolutely.
Most definitely.
Yeah, it could have been an easy one. Michael, what were you, oh, sorry, did you have
no,
one? Michael, what was your first encounter?
So my first encounter was, I would say, from birth, but the time that I was actually really realizing what that impact had on me was when I was losing my brother, Kim. And so for myself, we were kind of sheltered, just like you. Like we had a really harsh reality, but that reality was made comfortable because we were taught and we were told and we were shown that it was okay to be that way. And if we ever tried to be more than that, it would be like, no, you're going too far. You got to be careful. And so, unfortunately, you know, I've spoken on Glenn's podcast as well, and I've talked with Zach a lot about this in my own story. But to just give a brief summary, basically when I was born, I was diagnosed to a rare disease, and this disease was actually 2 out of 50 cases worldwide, and my brother was actually diagnosed with the same disease as well. And we were five years apart, and what happened was my brother was like the only person that I could physically, mentally relate to in this world, because he was the guy that knew how I felt and I knew how he felt. And what happened was our body basically didn't know how to properly protect itself. And because it didn't know how to protect itself, it replicated a lot of different symptoms and a lot of different issues, which multiplied into other factors that were very deadly. So within my brother's life of 10 years and my life of being sick for about 20 years, we had things like brain tumors, arthritis, kidney disease, liver disease, lung disease. We had a bunch of different deficits within our growth. Physically, mentally, we were declining. We were 10 years old, or I was 16 years old, and I had the education of a grade 2. And my brother couldn't even count at the time that he was 10 either. Wow. And so we were taught and we were told from a very young age that, like, that was it.
Right.
Like, the only thing you can expect is this.
Tough.
And if you dare go to try and find something else, you best believe you ain't going to have it, because you're not meant to. And so when my brother passed away and I got hit with that really hard reality of like, man, I'm next. Like when I felt the dead weight of my brother in his hospital bed and I just saw his little body sitting there and no life, nothing. And he was just there. I had a realization mentally and I was like, okay, that's me. And that's going to be me, because matter of fact, I don't want to be here, because I felt like the only destiny that I had to live for was the exact destiny that my brother lived out. And so as far as my experience goes within the mental health space and just that field in general, I fully agree with Zach on how your mental health is something that it's not like you don't have control over it. And it's not like it's just something that you're cursed with and you have no, you have no steps of actions you can take to become better.
Right.
And unfortunately, my brother didn't have anyone.
It doesn't have to be a destiny.
Yes, exactly. So it was shown to me that it was my destiny because Cameron passed away.
Right.
And so the whole mental health thing of it being this thing that we have no control over, it was my life. Mm-hmm. And it was my life up until I had to make the choice to change. And the only way I made the choice to change was I actually had some mentorship outside of my life.
Right.
To be able to say, hey, look, if you want something more than this, go grab it. You can. As a matter of fact, I'm going to show you.
Right.
Where I think that's the biggest difference between our society nowadays is we just get labeled something and we feel doomed. And we try and protect it. We try to hide it. And we run from it.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yes. So that's kind of like what I would say my experience is with it when it comes to the mental health aspect of things.
Interesting. So I'm going to ask both of you, but first we'll go with Zach. How did you process kind of that first encounter, right? Because you brought us through what happened.
Yep.
Take us through kind of like how, like the processing stage for you.
Well, like again, like I think like anytime like you lose somebody that you're extremely close to, right? Yeah, you always have like those stages of grief that everyone kind of has experienced.
Yeah.
But just like some people, you know, sometimes you can't get out of some of those stages.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of like processing it, one of the, and I don't know if I did it on purpose or if it was accidental or if it was just kind of stubbornness, so I can't necessarily say exactly why.
Sure.
But the one thing that I am extremely glad I did was I immediately took actions.
Nice.
And they weren't always the right ones. And there were people that were hurt in the process, including myself. There were my family. You know, I lost relationships with a lot of people in my family for a while. I put myself into really terrible relationships for a long time. I was terrible to a lot of people that I was close to for a long time. But I always tried, and I always tried to figure out where I was going wrong to try to make those improvements. And I fucked up a lot on, like along the way. But the one thing that I can guarantee I know I did was good. Was that I kept trying to take actions.
And you had the best of intent while doing that too, right?
Of course. And I mean, the best of intent at the time,
yeah.
right? Like the intent at the time,
what you know,
the exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The intent was never to harm other people, right? The intent was to try to, you know, sometimes it was to try to get away from certain people
yeah.
that I felt were bringing too much stress or negativity to my life. Whereas sometimes I was really the one responsible for bringing that negativity and stress onto them.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was trying to take care of people as a way of replacing taking care of myself,
yeah, fully.
Which I did for years. You know, I still struggle with it. Sometimes it was putting myself into overcommitting to things or to committing to people so that I
yeah.
could get the validation that I was so desperately now seeking
right.
after losing my mom and after my family had kind of, you know, fell apart for a little bit.
Of course.
But the one thing I always did was like, I always kept trying new shit until it failed.
Nice.
And then when I would finally find something that worked, or I would find a relationship, whether it's with a friend or even just like a mentor, when I found something that clicked for me, I stuck with it. And I did what I could to preserve that and to foster and to let it grow into more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's the me taking actions, despite them sometimes being absolutely the wrong actions, because I kept taking those actions is how I managed to make something beautiful out of what happened to
right.
me and was able to put myself in a position where I can now not only talk about it with close friends, but I feel like I can share that experience with the world so that other people can learn from it. And I've developed skills and I've developed an ability to speak and I've developed an ability to help people that I would not have been able to get had it not been for me constantly taking action and never settling for just being depressed or never settling for being unhappy or never settling for being ashamed of who I was or what had happened to me and my family.
Now, one thing I've always kind of admired about you is you, I had never heard anybody talk about it this way until I had met you and you told me about this.
Yeah.
And I have one of my most viewed video on TikTok is a clip of you explaining why you don't like the word coping, like, oh, I'm coping with my issues or whatever. Can you elaborate on that a little bit before we get to Michael's answer?
Yeah, I think it's just like, I think it's similar to Mikey, where it's just like, when you're using that term, you're labeling yourself as always being a victim of
fully.
It.
Fully.
And I don't think, and to be clear, it's like, I don't think there's anything wrong with coping.
Right.
What I think is wrong with coping is when you just accept it as like, that's
Bingo.
The forever.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So as in like this thing happened or I was diagnosed with whatever and I'm now forever coping.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Coping is an important part and you need to cope with shit to be able to move on.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you're coping with shit so you can continue to cope with
right.
it, then you're not really coping, right?
You're
it kind of defeats
yeah,
the purpose of it.
No.
Right? It's like, so that's my main kind of beef when people say that. I'm like, okay, that's great that you're coping.
Yeah.
But are you just planning on coping with this forever?
Yeah.
Or do you plan on moving forward from it? And
right.
From
and what does that look like?
And what does that look like for you? Because it's
yeah.
going to be individual for everyone.
Right. And Michael, what does that look like for you, dude? Like, what is the process of how you went through those that first encounter?
Yeah. So it's very interesting because you brought up the point on how you constantly took action.
Yeah.
So
a lot of wrong ones.
Well, you took action though.
Yes.
For myself, I did it. For myself, I stopped everything. Matter of fact, when my brother passed away and I accepted or I coped with the fact that I was next, with the fact that I was going to be dead as well, I stopped eating. I stopped drinking. I stopped moving. I stopped going anywhere I could possibly go to get any help because I felt as if my life expectancy and my life dream or my life destiny was just to end up like my brother. And so when it came down to the identification of what that actually entailed is I'll be completely honest with you. I wanted to die. I wanted to leave. And it wasn't until I was able to know from an outside perspective and a mentor of mine, Christian, who's a mutual mentor of ours, to realize that I was more than my circumstance.
Right.
And I don't know if you had a change in your thinking with taking action when you maybe thought to yourself, okay, I'm doing a lot of stuff, but what is this going towards? And so for me, I never had a North Star. I never had a goal. I never had an objective because all my life I was taught, Mike, just cope with your disease, cope with your illness, cope with your sickness.
That was your objective.
Because you're going to die anyways. So are you going to really try and apply yourself to school? No, I'm going to go home and play video games.
Right.
Are you going to try and actually eat healthy, sleep well, and drink water and do things to...
There was never a reward.
No, there wasn't. And the reward was greater with me just suffering with my little brother than me trying to put hassle on myself to be something that I thought was impossible.
Yeah.
Mm. And until I knew from my mentor that I had potential,
yeah,
that possibility was never there. And I believe, ironically, that I need to get to a point where I didn't want to live and I did want to commit suicide in order to see that there was something greater and something that I was neglecting for so many years, which was the catapult to my shifting in my life.
Right. So that's interesting. So what I've been thinking about, kind of as you guys have been going through, before we get into the second kind of today's society conversation about how, as it pertains to mental health with men specifically, how can people better identify, like, those things that you were talking about in the beginning, like the little, ooh, this is just a thing, you know, oh, it's so far away. Like, how can people better identify those?
Those warning shots.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough because, like, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And I don't know if there's necessarily a way to, like, really identify those things before anything
unless
happens.
You know.
Yeah,
unless
yeah.
you
okay.
know.
It's really hard.
An example of that is, like, looking back on it now, like, I'm going to be 31 soon. My mom passed away when I was 20. So it's been almost 11 years. We're like going on 11 years now.
Yeah.
Looking back on, like, my mom's behavior now, knowing what I know now, after doing, you know, almost a decade of, like, research and looking into this stuff and experiencing it myself and doing the work in the community that I've done with Five Cent City.
Amazing.
I can see those signs now as a 31-year-old and be like, oh, my mom was fucked up for a long time. Like,
yeah.
You know, right? And I mean that in, like, the best way possible.
Yeah.
Is, like, there were so many warning signs
mm.
that I can identify now as somebody who I would consider myself a bit of an expert in that field.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
But as a 20-year-old, would I have ever been able to be like, mom seems like she's working late all the time and she gets really sad when she comes home and she didn't get to do all her work.
Mm.
I didn't know.
Right.
Right? I think what's important is being able to, when something does happen, and it doesn't have to be as extreme as, you know, like your brother passing away or your mother committing suicide or somebody in your family having an overdose. Like, it doesn't have to be that extreme. But when something happens and you feel this feeling of like, ooh, that didn't sit right and I'm really bothered by this.
Right.
That's a good time to do inventory on, were there signs before?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this person who was overdosing, were there signs? Did they have some kind of behavior beforehand
mm-hmm.
that was like maybe an indication that they were struggling or maybe an indication that they
right.
were hiding things? Or maybe that was their way of asking for help, right? And you might not be right, but it's good to do that little bit of an inventory when you do have a little bit of a glimpse into that world and you're like, oh, something seems off now. And now I've seen the consequence of, like, there's definitely something wrong.
Right.
Having a little bit more awareness and trying to pick up on those things over time, like any other skill, I think is the really important thing. Because, like I said, you don't know what you don't know. You can't see signs if you don't know what's going on.
Right.
But the second you get that little hint of something, that's when you can start checking in. And that's whether it's checking in with yourself or just being more aware of those behaviors of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage anybody to, you know, talk to the people that
yeah,
they care
yeah.
about if something like that happens. I think
yeah.
a lot of times people just try to kind of brush it off as like, you know, like, oh, we don't talk to them on the holidays because they like to drink a little too much. And everyone just kind of has
yeah.
that, like, weird uncle
yeah,
or aunt that
yeah.
they, like, you know, like, we don't really talk
kind
about it.
Kind of funny, but this
yeah,
is,
but everyone
yeah.
kind of knows it's a little too far sometimes.
It's like the
yeah.
elephant in the room.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly
it's okay
it
to address that. It doesn't
yeah.
have to be aggressive. It doesn't have to be angry, but it's okay to be like, hey, like, what's up with this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, am I the only person who seems like, or who notices that that's a little off?
Yeah.
yeah.
Or that it bothers them? And I think another thing is people are so worried that they're going to say something and
yeah.
they're going to be the reason that somebody gets triggered and fucking ends up blowing up.
Especially nowadays.
Yeah. Oh, especially nowadays.
Especially
yeah.
nowadays.
Everyone is so careful, right? We don't want to say shit that might piss somebody off or that
yeah.
might
yeah.
send them over the edge.
Yeah. Or just like a little too sensitive. In
yeah.
Areas.
Which
yeah.
personally I think is extremely egotistical because if somebody's already on the edge, it's not that
yeah.
one thing that you're going to say that is going to be the reason why they do something to harm themselves. Well,
no.
that could be hurtful.
It's
to
compounded
themselves.
Over time.
It's a compound,
yeah.
right? And what I would argue is that it's actually more hurtful to not do and say anything
100%
by
than
far.
It would be to acknowledge from a loving and caring place that you are concerned about
yeah.
someone.
Yeah.
even though you know that they might feel ashamed or guilty about that feeling.
Yeah.
Shame, guilt, all those things are terrible places to be. When people commit suicide or when people overdose, like, they feel ashamed of who they are. They're not proud of who they are or what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
People feel guilty. They might feel angry. But even anger can be a great motivator for some people to get their shit together.
Yes.
Right? Like, you might see somebody you know who starts doing all this shit and they start getting better, and you might get so angry and bitter and resentful that they're doing better than you. And for some people, that's enough to get them out and to start doing shit to work harder. But when somebody's in a point of shame, and I've given a lot of thought personally where maybe you guys have a different opinion.
Yeah.
I think shame is the worst place you could possibly be, because any other emotion, even anger, resentment, bitterness, any of those things, jealousy, you're jealous of another person, but you're still accepting of who you are.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas with shame, you're so ashamed of who you are, you don't want to be him.
Right.
So it's not that I want what you have. If I'm ashamed of who I am, I want to be you. I'd rather be you than myself.
Yeah.
And eventually, if that sticks and that lingers, I'm going to start to think that, you know, I don't even deserve to be you.
Exactly.
Right.
And nobody wants me around anyways, because I'm so ashamed of who I am. And that's the worst place to be, I think. And that's where people kick off. I would rather risk having somebody get angry and jealous and bitter at me, if that's the trigger for them to get healthy, than to say nothing and be silent and watch them just swirl into this dark pit of shame until they decide that they don't want to be who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that takes tremendous courage. And a lot of times that could be very intimidating. And it's funny you said that, because even for myself, I was that person who had all that shame.
Yeah.
And it took Christian having the courage and, you know, I'll say the balls to say what everyone was thinking, but never said. And the first thing he ever told me before he even told me his name was, have you ever thought about killing yourself? And I was thinking about that for 2 years straight. And I hid it from every single person, even my therapist.
Yeah.
Because I was so shameful and so guilty that, first of all, my parents just lost a son. So am I going to be that negative and selfish to now kill myself and give my parents the other bear the pain, two kids that have died? And so my mental process was to hide from my parents and to hide from the people who love and care for me. I'm going to make it look like I died a hero through my sickness, which is why I stopped eating. I stopped drinking. I stopped doing everything, because I just wanted to be gone. I wanted to go be with my brother.
And you hid it in
sickness. Yeah. And I never, ever admitted to anyone other than Christian that I wanted to kill myself. And I feel like that's the first step of any change, especially in that, is when you're able to even just verbally say it, because it's such a, I can express for myself, it feels so heavy, and so you feel so guilty, because you're like, you're caught between this thing of like, I have so many people who love me, or I have people who, you know, care for me and are there for me, but yet I still don't want to be here for them. And you have to bear the pain of like, okay, how am I going to pull this off where maybe I can just let them be, and they can watch me pass without knowing that ultimately I wanted that to happen for myself.
Which again is ultimately the most selfish thing you can do, is to allow yourself to go down that path and never give the people you care about the opportunity to help you get out. I 100% would agree. It's an awful, terrible place, but I think by asking it and by bringing it up in a way that you know, Christian did with you, is like, a lot of times when we do that, when we risk offending people or we risk pissing them off, what we also can end up doing, and the only way to do it, is by risking it.
Yes.
You also give people permission to acknowledge how they feel.
Yeah, you do.
And you give people permission to be vulnerable.
And doing that too, it creates a sense of non-judgment. So I don't feel, when I've been called out, or I'm sure you guys have in the past, if somebody's holding you accountable or forcing you in a position where either you have to be the one to be courageous, or they're being courageous by confronting you.
Yeah.
And putting themselves in the fire and testing that friendship, right, that's been forged. You're, like you said, not allowing them to take away from any of that. But how do you guys go about going from, like, instilling that courage into somebody? Because it sounds like you guys have, like, you had somebody else kind of bring it to you. And it sounds like you were able to kind of find it in you. That's, but how would you almost coach that?
See, if you don't mind, I'll go first on it. So, like, for myself, all I'm going to say is, I'll speak from personal experience with that, is
please.
a lot of the times to develop the courage to be able to call someone out on something, you have to first call yourself out on those things, or you have to be reliable enough to accept criticism from other people on some flaws that you've been through. And so for myself, like, you both know me very well. And a lot of my life, I've been what's called a chameleon, which is I like to blend in because I'm ashamed of who I actually am. And more than ever now, that's not the case. Now I'm more confident in myself. I'm more present in the moment of realizing what I have to bring to the table and what I can offer for others. So therefore, I have more courage to try and challenge other people on their own stuff to help them. But I think the way you coach that is really you have to bear that pain yourself and be challenged in some sort of way and have a positive outcome from that challenge to then be able to realize and have the balls of courage to do that for someone else. Because anytime I ever coach, especially youth, because I'm sure Zach, you would agree with this for yourself, is I'm very passionate about youth because I look at every person I coach that's younger or like around my brother's age or around my younger self is I'm giving what my brother never had. Like my brother never had Christian. My brother never had anyone to look up to. And a lot of my life I was guilty because I was never that guy for him. But just like you said at the beginning, I didn't know any better. We were taught to be weak. We were taught to be sick. So then now that I'm not that, I'm like, any way I can, I'm going to have the courage and balls to do that for other people. So that my brother can watch and be like, okay, Michael's carrying what he needed to get better to now all of these other people.
So you are what you and your brother didn't have.
And that's my mission.
So every kid is like a version of
I think if you I think most people that end up in a position where they're doing something they really truly love and care and are passionate about, most people end up doing something that they wish they had when they were young. Right? Like you being the coach, you inspiring the youth, is you are doing exactly what you wanted to do the most when you were a kid. What you wanted for you the most when you were
Sure.
And I think we could all, to some extent, say that like we are doing a version of what we felt we needed the most.
And I think you touched on it too, Zach, with saying needed. We might have not known we wanted this version. Right? That's tricky.
And for me, like, I totally agree. I think the only thing that I would add, not even add, but just like for my take on it, is like, if you don't allow yourself to fully feel what you're feeling and to fully dig into it, as in like, I think that especially as men, we have this thing where there's this like narrative where it's like, you're strong if you're never affected by things.
And you're supposed to be.
You're brave if you're never afraid of things.
Yeah.
You are resilient if nothing ever bothers you. And it's like,
made out to be perfect.
That's not appealing to me. Like,
no.
Like, I've never met anyone in my life that I could genuinely say has just been unaffected by anything ever. But I have met a lot of incredible people in my life that when they are hit by shit, find a way within themselves to get stronger from it. Right? And that can't happen if you don't first address that it's a vulnerability. Right? So yeah, I think that would be the only thing is like you have to fully feel what you're feeling. It doesn't mean you sit there and you dwell on it forever, but it's just like you can't deny that you have those feelings. You can't deny that you're afraid. You can't deny that you're sad. You can't deny that you are angry or bitter. You have to embrace it. And then over time, you will get really quick at bouncing back from it. But if you never embrace it, it's like, it's the same thing as like saying that like you're really good at bench pressing, but you've never actually tried to do your one rep max.
Right?
But you keep telling everyone that you have a really strong bench press, but you don't actually really know how strong it is because you've never tested it.
You don't know what you're capable of.
You've never actually really gone in there to test it, right? I'm sure with you with grappling, it's like, I'm sure you have guys that can talk a lot of shit about how they're good at grappling, but they never want to go up against certain people.
And especially with dudes, too, to that point, there's a lot of people who will say, it's like, oh, I can, I can fight. Or like, I can take you. And so that's not even to me. That's just in general. People say, oh, I can take you. It's like, you don't even know what you don't know.
It's
the craziest thing ever.
And they're not willing to test it.
Or to really feel it. Because that's scary.
And that goes back to the courage. And that, and to your point also, I think a big thing we got to talk about too is there's a middle ground in between feeling it and staying in it. And so you can feel it all you want, but when you make that your default emotion, you become it. And so a lot of my life, I was a victim because I stayed in my emotions so much that I never chose to have the courage to leave it. And it only took that when I felt it so bad and I was literally on my deathbed that I had to make a conscious choice. Am I going to go be what my brother was, or am I going to be something different?
Right.
And that only came from me being pushed to the depths of the bottom.
And that's an extreme example.
Exactly.
Right? Where there are people that will have this issue of, oh, maybe it wasn't nearly that extreme, yeah, as you mentioned earlier.
Definitely.
But they'll be in those, in that scenario where they're like, oh, I can't have this or I can't have that. So they don't know how to get out of it, or it's, oh, it's not too bad because I might not be suicidal, but oh man, my days are really bad.
Yes.
And then they don't make a conscious effort.
Yes.
To fix that.
Yeah. And I think it's, yeah, like,
feelings are feelings when they come and go.
Yeah.
And you will have good ones and bad ones, and they will come and go. And, you know, that's just the way that
it is.
System,
yeah,
works.
Yeah.
But when a feeling lingers and it sticks, that's now a state.
Yeah, that's,
yes,
just check engine light staying on.
Fully,
that's,
yeah,
fully,
that's agreed.
The, I think that's the difference. Is like, feeling your feelings is extremely important.
Important. Very.
Staying in your feels. Right? This isn't a Drizzy Drake album. Like,
yeah,
you gotta work your way out of them every time.
And, that, and that's I think, the biggest, that's the hardest, I think, battle to have courage in our day and age now. Because you get picked on for being weak if you're in it too long. And you get picked on for being too strong or too not vulnerable if you're not in it. And what's funny is both of them is you're still in it.
Yeah.
If you're trying to dismiss the feelings and put on a face that you're not feeling those things, you still deal with it.
Right.
But then if you're the opposite, where you're just full blast feeling those feelings, you are then looked at as,
yeah,
a victim. So it's very hard because you have to find a middle ground of being vulnerable and being open and receiving courage and developing courage. But you also have to be able to let go and develop a new sense of yourself.
Mm-hmm. So as it pertains to, maybe you just started touching on it a little bit, how do you think in today's society, why do you guys think it's been a bit more difficult for dudes? Like, it's such a big thing. Like, we don't get enough attention on it.
Yeah.
And I want to say too, I want to add this, we're all in different industries. Like, you,
yes,
guys, industries kind of mirror each other a little bit more,
a little bit, yeah,
not per se mine.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give an example too, because this is a recent one, because I feel I need to share a bit about this. But in the last, so I just started my first week, I took over another building, but I took over from a guy on last minute because their old dude that was taking care of the building had committed suicide.
Wow.
So it's like, hey, Glenn, you know so-and-so? And I'm like, yeah. Well, so-and-so killed himself last night. There's hours available. That was the conversation I had.
Wow.
This woman's in tears.
Yeah.
Telling me, hey, we need somebody to replace. And I was like, whoa. It's a little freaky. So in like the last, and I had worked with him a couple times in the past, like in passing,
yeah,
for a couple weeks here and there, right, on different jobs and stuff. But he had, in the last 2 years, I've probably worked with or worked with people who had worked with them. So not really that far off, not like my buddy's ex-boyfriend's brother.
Yeah,
one or twice removed, yeah, exactly, Zach. And they had all committed suicide, and we all had the same, like, we had worked in construction. We all were really like, oh, all happy-go-lucky on the job site, all seemed very confident,
yep,
very good at what they were doing,
yep,
and their skill set, like, really good, like, either maintenance guy or really good carpenter, some, like, one of the best rough carpenters I've ever met, ran a business, did really well with it, and now... And, like, that's how we,
yeah,
that's how it ended for him, earlier than we all kind of expected and hoped for. So that's been tough. So it's very, very tricky in the industry, and I'll touch on that in a bit. But I'm wondering, you guys, too, like, how, why do you think now it's kind of starting to become a bit better for men? Like, we need to start talking,
yeah,
to it. Why do you guys think it's, like, starting to finally come to a bit of the forefront now?
You definitely got this one, Zach.
I think men, generally speaking, like to fix shit.
Yeah.
And this is purely theoretical. I have no fucking idea or anything to back this up. This is purely just how, the way I see it, the way I feel about it. Generally speaking, men like to fix shit. And we also, in just generally in society, as much as some people like to kind of push back on it, and it's not even about the whole, like, general thing or anything,
sure,
like that, but just generally speaking, men tend to feel like they take on a lot. not that women don't, it's just different.
Yeah.
Right? We tend to take on a different role or
right.
different responsibility.
Yeah, as it pertains to men, yeah.
Exactly.
And
right?
I agree with
you. It's not at all a contest, right?
Yeah.
It's just men feel different shit.
I'm glad you
and
said it was
they
a contest.
Feel it,
yeah.
They feel it in a different intensity than someone who will feel other things. Sometimes it'll be less, sometimes it'll be more,
yeah.
right? But because of that, I think there's this responsibility that men put on themselves or on their crew
yep.
and on and project into society where it's like, we have to be strong.
Yeah, definitely.
We have to provide to a certain extent, or we have to be, you know, secure to a certain extent. And all of these responsibilities, just like it affects women, a lot of these responsibilities can start to add up and they start to build up and then people can get overwhelmed. And I think that with men as feeling as though, you know, they are responsible for fixing shit or for safety, when things start to go wrong,
right.
you also get this ego that comes in where you start to kind of go, well, fuck, like, am I the reason that this is all going wrong?
Right.
And I'm going to take the responsibility onto myself
mm-hmm.
to try to fix it.
Of course.
But just like a carpenter who might have incredible skills in his avenue
yeah.
might not have the skills required
right.
to fix the real problems
100%.
That actually
yeah,
in his life.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, I think there's this thing perpetuated amongst men where it's like, we're not supposed to ask for help. We're supposed to have it all by ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think something that we've all kind of heard before that I think we've all started to live by a lot more since we've met is that,
yeah.
you know, you can get faster alone
yes.
or you can get further together.
Oh, it's crazy.
And
yeah.
I think a lot of men specifically, not that women don't, but a lot of men think that they need to get as far as possible by themselves,
mm-hmm.
because is the only way that they are going to be successful is by burdening everything onto their shoulders and carrying the fucking team, you know, like carry the boats,
yeah.
which is like, sometimes you do have to,
yeah.
yeah.
but sometimes you want to know that a motherfucker is carrying the boats next to you.
Yeah, you need help.
And that is when not even just always asking for help, but just when feeling as though you are part of a group and part of
yeah.
the unit is so important
mm-hmm.
because maybe sometimes you can't carry the boat all by yourself
100%.
Or maybe sometimes you just have a task ahead of you that you have not been equipped to deal with properly.
Yeah.
And there's somebody who can help you. So just like the carpenter who might be, I cannot fucking build shit.
Agreed.
Right?
Me too.
I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I need another man to help me with that shit.
Yeah.
If I really needed to build some shit, I'm not the guy to
yeah.
call.
But yeah.
I would call you.
Yeah.
But on that other hand, it's like, a lot of guys don't want to do that. A lot of men
right.
don't want to admit that vulnerability. Again,
yeah.
they don't want to have the balls to say, you know what? I don't fucking know this.
Yeah.
Because I'm supposed to be the one who knows everything and who can fix everything, and I don't know how to fix this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's a problem, like I was saying, just like with your mental, it's just like a physical issue. If you have a back problem, if you have back pain,
mm-hmm.
we don't seem to have an issue being like, hey, I'm going to go see the massage therapist because I got lower back problems, or I'm going to go see the doctor, or I'm going to go see a chiropractor or a physio
yeah.
or whatever because I got lower back problems, and it's really bothering me, and as a man, I don't know how to fix it. But we don't have that same attitude when it comes to our mental. It's like,
no.
we'll have these issues, and we're like, I got to figure out how to fix it. You don't have the fucking skills.
No.
Like, it's just, they're not there. And you're not supposed to have all the skills.
Yeah.
That's why we fucking have a village.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Rely on the village, because relying on that village when you need it also gives you the ability to then, when shit needs to get built,
of course.
As a carpenter, that's when you get to shine even more.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what's better than a great carpenter? A great carpenter who's also happy and motivated and has the support to continue
mm-hmm.
to do what he's doing at a high level.
Right.
Right?
He's putting that out into the other people and it
rolls 100%.
Down.
It's like, it's being able to delegate when it's needed and, again, having the balls to admit when you don't have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for men specifically, I think a lot of times we are so terrified because of this image to admit that we don't have all the answers. So we would rather pretend like we have all the answers until we are completely proven wrong through disaster, and then we fall apart. Or we hide them, like
yep.
you did for so long, that I don't have the answers, I don't have a solution, but I'm going to hide it, I'm going to pretend like everything's
yeah.
all good, until eventually that weight gets so heavy that my legs crumble underneath it, and I can't keep fucking
exactly.
carrying shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see men break.
There's something I want to touch on, a short story for Michael before I ask you this.
Yeah.
But the first time I kind of came head to head with this, you need to like put your ego aside
mm-hmm.
and focus on asking for help. So I was working at this outdoor center and we were doing this like staff training week, right? So they're developing, there's leadership staff, so I was one of them. So I'd be running different programs with like on leadership development with young, like 14 to 16, 17 year olds. And our staff training week was our director at the time took the, myself and a few other of the leadership counselors and like the kind of senior staff at the place. And they put us, they're like, hey, you're going to do this. We're doing these exercises, right? These development ones. So one of the things they had us do is they got us into this like gagaball court, but it's basically picture like a 2 2x4s stacked on top of each other with one drilled in the back into the ground. So it's basically it's an octagon. So imagine we're in the octagon, right? Like that kind of shape.
Yep.
And we're all blindfolded. Okay. And we're all blindfolded and we have to figure out how to, the rules were, okay, you can't go over the barrier, you can't touch the barrier, you can't go under the barrier, you can't go around it. If you need help or you want to get out, ask for help. Okay. That was the instructions, clear as day. Everybody's walking into it. Everybody's walking into it. People are like, we're brainstorming, we're allowed to speak and do anything, we're blindfolded. You can't go over, around, under, through. If you want to get out, ask for help. Dude, I remember my buddy and I were in this thing for like 15, 20 minutes, like trying to figure it out. We were like asking the group and then all of us, trying to fix it. And then eventually the time ran out. And then they're like, okay, whoever's left, take your blindfolds off. And me and my buddy popped our blindfold off. There were 7 women of the 9 of us all outside of the circle.
Wow.
And me and my buddy were sitting there like, what did we miss?
That's crazy.
What did we miss? Dude, I had done that same thing, this exercise, like a few times kind of in the last like however many years, like whether it be in Ecuador, this other program, or at this outdoor center. And I had ran it with other people as well, and I've seen the exact same thing. A lot of us dudes will sit there and be like, okay, how can we figure this out? How can we, okay, well, if we go
and bashing your head against the wall.
And it's like, well, I don't actually have the answer. How do you get out? Ask for help. So what happened is you'll see somebody be like, I was like, oh, I had done this before. So I knew. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, I don't know. Put my hand up. Guy came over, tapped me on the shoulder, said, take your blindfold off, walk off. I was like, oh, I'm an idiot, dude. I was like 19 when that happened. So I was lucky that it was like, I felt so dumb.
Young enough.
That I was like, it was impressionable. I'm happy it didn't happen.
And would you say that like your ego got bruised at that?
Dude, it was bad. Yeah, I remember being like,
but how much better is it now that you feel?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. And I'm like, not really shy to do it. That's like, you know, why we're all here and stuff like that. It's like, oh, I want to do this. I need to go here. It's like, no, you can reach out to people.
Yeah.
And like you said earlier, Zach, because I really want to hammer this point home too. You're not, like, you're robbing the person of the chance to help you.
100%.
Right? It's like...
But that's what they work for.
Yeah. 100%.
So if I'm really good at fucking... Like, if you're really good at building a house, and I'm really good at fucking getting people healthy, if you're not healthy, then you can't build a house.
What good am I to anybody?
We both end up without a house and unhealthy.
Yeah.
Let me help you, because I'm going to need your help back. And then we both get better at what we're doing. We both have the enjoyment of being able to help somebody we care about. And then we both have the joy of being able to then continue to grow, because now we're not in this state where we are just sitting here feeling sorry and miserable for ourselves because we can't figure out the solution.
Yeah.
We've both grown from it.
Yeah.
And I might pick up some tricks, and maybe next time I don't need as much help. And maybe next time you get on Ellie, maybe you don't need as much help, but we still have that connection that you know you can rely on somebody for that skill that you might not be an expert in. And here's the other thing too, I do not give a flying fuck enough to learn how to build a house.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't.
Agreed.
I am not ever
going
to want to learn how to build a house.
Yeah,
do I want to learn how to do some shit? 100%.
Yeah.
I have other interests. I have other passions. I have other things I really want to get good at.
Mm-hmm.
Building a house isn't one of them.
Yeah, of course.
And I have no shame saying I'm not the guy to build a house.
Right.
But if I had to, I know who I would ask to help me learn how to
do it. Like get from point A to point B.
I know I could do it. Mm-hmm. I know that if I put the time and I put the work in, I would absolutely be able to build a house.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that I don't want to right now.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask the guy that I know can help.
Who has the resources
and who wants to
build the village.
100%.
Because if you're not healthy enough to show up to work, what good are you?
Yeah, exactly.
I know I'm more like, you know, I'm like the shaman type. You know, I'm like sitting in my tent dancing and singing and 100%. Shit. Like, I need someone to build the fucking tent for
100%.
Me.
Yeah.
Someone's got to build my hut.
Somebody's got to put up the beams.
All right?
It's,
I'm cool by the fire, you know? Like, that's my role. Let me do my shit.
Well, at least you know your role, right?
Yeah. Because
it's like, it's funny because... it's funny because I hear this conversation, and we've talked about this amongst brothers a lot. So for myself, it's funny because I'm in like an opposite role.
where all my life I always asked for help. Yeah. I had all the help. I needed all the help. So I was very used to always needing someone to do something for me. I was always used to not relying on myself. I was always used to being that guy that, like, okay, I'm not going to try this because the likelihood of me being able to do this is very low because of this and this and this and this. And what's interesting is, as we know, as a close friend group, is since I've become my own person and had the opportunity to learn from these great individuals as we're sitting on this podcast and all the other individuals we have in our life, is the greatest decision I ever made was to take what I had and run with it. And ever since, I've learned how to have a balance where I wasn't that guy that said, no, I'm not going to tell anyone around me that I needed help, because I felt like I couldn't do anything for myself anyways because I was so doomed. And now what's interesting is I've had to learn how to trust myself and do things on my own, which has been the hardest and most single difficult thing that I've done probably in my life, because I'm so used to needing and having help and hands to get me to do this. Or, you know, like in school, like I never took my own notes because I had arthritis in my hands. So who did I have? I had an EA that would literally write all my notes for me.
That's great.
I had an EA that would literally write my test for me.
Yeah.
I had friends and people who would write essays for me because I couldn't type. So when it came to daily life activities, exactly on how, where I am now as a trainer and coach, I needed to figure out how to do it, which was the most single hard thing to overcome. And I think the way that you overcome that is exactly how we're talking about this, which is being okay and vulnerable enough to first admit that you don't know how or you need help. And then secondly, which is the biggest thing, take action on it, which is probably the hardest single most thing that you'll ever do.
I think that it's by admitting your weaknesses that you are then able to acknowledge your strengths.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, again, like, if you have a weakness and you know it's a weakness and you know it's something that causes you a lot of grief or a lot of pain, take action on it. Learn from it. Ask the people who are good at it what they do and how they got so good at it, and invest into developing that weakness to a certain extent, right? But then also learning to run with your strengths is incredibly valuable.
It's
and
huge.
I think there's a lot of men that put this value on themselves as being, you know, whether it's a provider or maybe in some cases as being a victim.
Yes.
Right? Mm. Which everyone kind of has these things where it's like, this is who I am. This is how I do it. This is what I, this is how I get shit done. Right? And we put this identity onto ourselves, and it's hard when that identity that you put onto yourself isn't getting you or giving you the things in the life and the outcome that you want.
Exactly.
And that is another one of those warning shots.
Yes.
Where that is time to take inventory on, are you really doing everything that you want to be doing or should be doing to get you to where you want to be?
Right.
Yeah.
And if not, if that festers and that stays and that feeling sticks, like we talked about earlier, it's like you're now in a state.
Yep.
Right.
And that state can become very dangerous.
And it becomes autopilot. And until you know anything
exactly,
you're not going to change.
And it's only by admitting that you have those weaknesses that you can then acknowledge and be like, you know what? I fucking suck at this shit.
Yep.
But I'm really good at this, and I'm going to invest into that.
Yep.
And I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep working on this because I need to work on it, and it's caused me a lot of problems.
Mm.
And I'm going to ask for help to deal with it from people that I know and that I trust that are good at it.
Yep.
But I'm going to really use this to develop the skill that I'm actually really good at.
Yeah.
And that's when you start to get confidence.
100%.
That's when you start to feel, you know, more valuable.
Yeah.
And that's when you'll, that feeling of like that shift in identity can happen, because now your identity doesn't change, it evolves.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
It's not, you know, I know it sounds really stupid, but I always try to think of it as like, I would rather always be Charmeleon looking to be a Charizard than to be stuck a fucking Charmander.
Agreed.
Right? I always want to know what is the next thing I can do to help me evolve into the next version of myself. At the root of it, I'm still the same person.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the same, you know, relatively the same interests, the same morals, the same values.
Yeah.
But over time, I will continue to acquire new skills and a new ability to perform those skills.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to help me grow.
Yeah.
And then it's by learning to apply those skills that I become a better person. I become more valuable for my friends. I become more valuable for the people that are dear to me.
Yeah.
I can't do that
if I run away from every challenge and never admit that I'm bad at some shit.
Right.
But I also can't do that if I don't ever say, you know what, I'm fucking good at this and I'm going to keep doing it.
Yep.
And you're going to acknowledge that I'm fucking good at it.
Mm-hmm. And with the thing too, what's cool with that, what you said is that being around that, and I'm sure I've told you guys this in the past, and if I haven't, well, I'm talking now. being around you guys is inspiring.
Mm.
I wanted to kind of tell you guys at different points, but I was like, hey, what's the best way to do this? And I've told our friend Pat, I've told you guys, I've told like Trev and a couple other people that we both know. And I've talked to them, and like, yo, being around you, like you wanting to be, it could be like just a better father.
Yeah.
Or it's like you wanting to be a better athlete, or you wanting to compete at international stage. I had never really thought of that as a thing I like could do or wanted to even do. And it's like, oh, I'm around people who are looking to do that.
Yeah, it's so cool.
And it's like, oh, this is a thing I could do. Yeah. And then you're able to take inspiration and then offer help, right? So even if there's not like a direct skill for skill, even just sitting here talking with you guys, I'm like grateful for that. I'm like, oh man, I get to take inspiration from you guys. Like, that's hilarious. I was like, what did I do to deserve this? Like, it's such a cool, like,
exchange.
Yeah. Even without it being like a money for money or a skill for skill.
No.
It and doesn't have to be that direct.
And arguably that's more valuable.
100%.
Yeah.
You know? Something that's, it doesn't even have to be planned out or spoken in terms of like, I'll give you this, you give me this in return. It's just this, when you're constantly challenging each other, and like you say, holding each other accountable and feeling inspired by the people you have around you, you can't help but want to do more.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I've introduced Michael to people that I've told them, be like, you're meeting Michael because you need a person like him in your life because you complain about the small things too much.
Yeah.
And listening to me isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
Because I could tell you the same thing over and over, but I'm like, no. So I'm like, oh, here. And then every time I talk to this person, I can tell you it was later, but every time I talk to this person after, they're like, you know, I'm really glad I met Michael.
Oh.
I'm like, why? For the exact reason I brought him to that person.
Which is beautiful. And I think that's when he, like, I gotta give you a big compliment, Glenn, is you're a great connector and like, just when it comes down to, like, you know exactly what people need and you know how to get them.
Mm.
You know how to line that up. Like, you're literally, that's your thing. Like, when it came to podcasting and stuff, like, it's just so cool on how, like, me and Zach connected, but we met because of this, you know? And then you had the courage to ask me, hey, come on my podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's hang out. Mm-hmm. Hey, live in my garage, you know? And now look at what we've created.
But you allowed me to help you, because you asked me for what? You asked me about, you're like, listen, man, even if it's not living with you, I do need somebody, like, you're in
somewhere,
this space.
Somewhere.
You have this skill set or resource or role that's people who have buildings and rooms and rent.
Yes.
Like, I know a bunch of landlords, property managers, so it's like, hey, I'm like, my garage.
Yes, and
until
it worked out
cold.
Perfectly.
Until it's cold, baby. And then, yeah, man, it worked out. So I'm really grateful for that. Yeah, you allowed me that opportunity to help you because you were able to have the courage.
Which made you guys close, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
To ask for that and then brought us here.
And I think too,
that's
like
cool.
Coming from someone, so like, I never really, like, okay, like this is gonna, I always try to have a way to express this and articulate this because it's very hard to articulate it without offending anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been something that I've been trying to work harder at, is
right.
Really not, I can't control how someone feels based off how I act or how I say things. All I can do is carry it with my own intention in my heart. And so a lot of my life, like, I had a lot of people in my life. Like, I had a lot of friends. I had a lot of family. I had a lot. But as far as, like, exchanges goes, where this has happened, or the exchanges we have with the guys we have in our group, and the, you know, Trevor and Pat, and there's nothing like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that what we have in that is the most rare thing that each of us carry.
Yes.
And there's nothing that can beat that, because not only are we unique and
it's
special.
Rarer than your rare disease, man.
Which is rare.
Way fucking rare. Which is crazy. 2 out of 50 cases worldwide. Nah, this is 1 in 1 billion.
That's
cases worldwide. Anyways, so I think that another point to touch on when it comes to this is you have to have people in your circle that are going to allow you to be you and push you to be you, which is what you have done. you have done, and every other person that we know in our close circle that has done for me.
Hell yeah.
And until I didn't know and love myself and come out of my shell as myself, I didn't live.
Yeah.
And I believe that's the thing that we like to drive home as a total unit, as a group here, is that you can have the courage yourself, but the everlasting thing is to have the courage to give that to others. And then let that be a ripple effect into every other field that you go into, creating those relationships, creating those friendships. Absolutely. And then that just continues to multiply.
So we've been talking a lot about, you know, robbing people of the ability to help others and stuff like that. And I think as a good reason for men who are, whether it be stubborn or their ego is more at the forefront of what they're doing and making their decisions, I think as a motivator even to actually create those relationships and foster kind of like what we've talked about that we all have and stuff like that with each other, and then even more so with certain people and others, you know, and still feeling like even the baseline of like the connections we have with people who maybe we don't see that often is still really well forged. I think what's cool, and that could be an inspiration or a motivating factor for those people who are like, well, why would I, you know, like, oh, I'm good now, I'll just deal with my shitty days. It's like, yeah, but you don't, like, there's now an incentive, and I want to drill that home. There's this incentive of you're robbing people of this chance to help you, but also you're robbing yourself of what could be, like what could take place, right? Like if I didn't let you move in, or if we didn't connect well, or if we didn't jive and I was kind of a tool when we first met and stuff like that, and vice versa, like it could have been, it's like, well, no, I don't want to do your show, you know, or may not even have one, right? It's like, okay, well then I might not have been introduced to you guys in different ways, might not have participated or helped out in the event and stuff like that, you know, but supporting and doing that and then putting yourself out there and being able to kind of offer that help, like, oh, I have a bit of a platform for what it is. Let's, you know, let's share a bunch of stuff, whether I'm not like asking to be involved or begging to be involved for me. It's like, oh, these are my friends.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, look what they're doing. Look at the cool stuff they're doing. Exactly. Right. And I think we should drive that incentive home for men who maybe don't want to ask for help, but they don't understand that not even just you're robbing the other person, you're robbing yourself.
Yes.
Right. It's kind of a crazy thing.
It is.
You know?
It's, I think the greatest asset we have as, this is going to sound very deep, but as humans is connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we don't choose to connect with each other in any way that might be, whether it be physically, mentally, right, socially, intimately, virtually, we are no longer human. And I think a great example of that is what happened with COVID.
Right.
And for myself, I come from a background where I didn't have connection. I didn't have belonging. And every time I lacked that thing, I was basically dying. And I believe that as humans, we need that thing to continue to push us forward and also recognize that we're not alone. And I feel like that we all need to understand that we have some sort of connection with every single individual that we partake in, when it comes to friend groups, when it comes to social situation, when it comes to work, whatever we want to say. And I believe the more we can make that an active effort to do like what we've discussed over, like, hey, you have this thing, I have this thing, let's work together.
Yeah. How can we get involved and help you?
How can we mesh?
Yeah.
And the more we can choose to mesh with each other instead of pushing each other away
and support
and making fun of each other or excluding each other, I think that's realistically what's going to help the most when it comes down to these issues that we're talking about, whether it be with suicide, whether it be with depression, whether it be with anxiety, whether it be with just any mental health barrier that unfortunately nowadays is so common, especially amongst the youth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, I think there's and I want to dive into this switching a bit, because I think Zach, it's kind of touching on that, but I want Zach to answer this first. So, specifically, we talked about Michael just now with the stresses of life, right? Whether it be in business or dealing with our own stuff or dealing with whatever business, family, goals, aspirations, fitness, that lifestyle that we all have, right? And it is exhausting. It takes a toll on us. But I want Zach kind of to touch on, for not even so much just managing business and the stresses of that, but being able to manage that and also be a father.
Oh, yeah. Because
there's a lot of people and a lot of men specifically who I know that'll put everything, because now it's not just like, I consider myself a protector, but that's like the odd time I see something happen. That's not 24/7, 365, right? So whereas I'm sure you might not see yourself that way, or you see yourself that way, and then however you do, I'm sure it's amplified when you're around your daughter, 100%. Right?
Yeah.
So I want you to kind of touch on that, like as a father, and for the men out there who are fathers, relate to that a little bit and touch on that.
Yeah, and like I can only speak as a father to a young girl, as I'm sure it's very, in certain ways, it's different to be a father for a young boy.
Sure.
Just in terms of like the role that you play,
yep.
right? Like generally speaking, kids learn to be emotional and how to express emotion from their mother because women are typically better at expressing emotion,
yeah.
not necessarily dealing with emotion. But they are better. No,
yeah.
that's not a joke. It's like, generally speaking, women are better at expressing their emotions.
Yeah.
Right? They might not necessarily have the tools to be able to deal with them and to be able to kind of move on from them all the time. Whereas
right.
men, a lot of times their big shortcoming more often can be that they just don't express it at all. So
or anger, yeah.
Or anger, or it comes out in very select little bursts of emotions, right?
right?
So that I find that, like, if the role... or one of the bigger roles for women is to be able to be that safe, vulnerable place for kids to learn to be able to express themselves safely,
right?
It's also very important for men to be able to present kind of like the counter to that, which is that part that we talked about like being able to take action,
mm-hmm.
being able to be respectful, being able to be disciplined, being able to provide safety and security, especially to a young girl who does not have the ability to do that. It's like, it is 100% amplified.
Yeah.
Right? And again, like, I'm sure that with a young boy, if I had a young boy, like, I would probably want them to go through a little bit more, you
yeah.
know, the physicality part of it.
Yeah.
Might not necessarily be as important for a young girl, but I think that for me anyways, I still want there to be something there.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And my goal as a father for my young girl is that I want her to be able to feel all the emotions and feel the confidence to do whatever it is that she wants to do.
Yep.
But I don't want to sacrifice that at the risk of having her end up feeling like a victim all the time.
Yeah.
And feeling like she needs to be dependent on another man.
Tricky.
To be able to build anything or to get anything or to accomplish anything.
Right.
So it's not that I want my kid to suffer, but I want my daughter to be able to struggle enough that she learns the skills and she learns to be able to push through and she learns to be able to be strong for herself.
That's a tough one.
Before doing it for other people.
Of course.
Because for me and my mother, the woman who is so emotional and the woman who was so in touch with her feelings that she felt her emotions for everyone before allowing herself to really deal with her own or without ever having the confidence to put herself first or the ability to feel that her needs were more important than others. There's a very big risk that if I don't cut that off or cut that cycle off, my daughter inherits those traits.
Right.
Right? Do I think it's a bad thing for a woman to be empathetic and caring for other people? Absolutely not. Do I think it's dangerous for a woman to be so empathetic to other people that she puts them before herself? Absolutely.
Yes.
So my role as a father for her is to be able to provide enough challenge that she learns to embrace that empathy that she already has, to embrace that creativity that she has, to embrace that femininity that she already has, while simultaneously being able to develop the skill and the abilities to be able to stand up for herself.
Yeah.
Or to be able to defend herself to a certain extent and to defend her ideas, right? And to build enough confidence that she feels able to challenge other people if they don't line up with her values that she will inevitably end up growing into, right? Whatever they end up being. So for me, it's like, again, different because I think that the role for a father to a young girl is slightly different than the role of a father to a young boy. The lessons are slightly different. But it's absolutely a massive mirror for me because if I look at my little girl, if I want her to be able to stand up to a boy one day,
right.
if he tries to do some shit to her and she's not ready for it, she's not comfortable with, how can I expect to teach my young daughter how to stand up for what she believes in if I don't represent it in myself on a day to day?
You have to lead. Yeah.
There is no lesson I could ever teach my, and I truly believe that I don't think any lesson a parent gives their kids is ever really spoken, right? It's felt and it's demonstrated.
Yeah.
Right? There can be a conversation about it afterwards that I think reinforces the point, but I don't,
if there's a reason that you could tell your kids to not, like, every parent tells their kid, don't drink, don't smoke, don't do drugs, don't do this. They all still, we all still did it, bro. Yeah. Like,
that's powerful.
Can you feel what it's like?
Yeah.
Or can you, right? And for me, like, being, having that side of my family hidden from me for so long, of, like, the consequences of drinking, the consequences of drugs, the consequences of not standing up for yourself, the consequences of never prioritizing your own feelings over somebody else's, because you always have to be nice for everyone else.
Right.
Because if you're not nice, they could end up having a hard time.
Yeah.
Right?
Oof.
How, right, it's hard to find that balance. But wanting my daughter more than anything to not have to deal through that, I have to make sure that I do everything I can to work on myself through those issues.
Right.
So that I can then demonstrate to her through her entire life how to do it.
It's hard.
Right?
It's very interesting because, so I'm not a father. and I knew you were going to say something. That's why I giggled. So being in that position as someone who grew up that never was really challenged as a boy was very difficult, because what happened was I had to learn very, very, very quick when I became healthy. Look, this is what you got
to
do.
You absolutely had the shortest turnover from boy to man I've ever seen.
And it's been hard because it's so overwhelming if you don't have those things taught to you at a young age.
Yeah.
And what's hard and what's sad is, like, you know, I think about my pops and my mom a lot because they never really had the opportunity to give those lessons.
Yeah, right.
Because they had to just be there to protect us and make sure that we were alive. And so as far as my dad being able to just show me how to use a screwdriver, my dad showed me how to just be able to work out, you know, do things that I know that now when I have a son or when I have a daughter, I want to be able to give to them.
Yeah.
My dad never had that opportunity.
Right.
My mom never had that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And they had to just literally watch their sons go through life with whatever was thrown at us. And what was the biggest thing that I, you know, that you touched on when it came to developing awareness and skills to utilize that in yourself and protect yourself from outside outcomes, I guess you could say, is it all starts from, first of all, having it shown to you and then you applying it. And a lot of my life, the only things that I was ever shown to be able to apply was surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And my way of surviving was, hey, Mike, you need this medication, because if you don't take this medication, this is going to flare up and then you're going to probably have this issue.
Right.
Where now, when I moved into your garage and when I moved here and I had, you know, this wonderful opportunity to actually step into the frame of who I was, it was so scary and so overwhelming because the simplest thing as living on my own, finding oven mitts, being able to just turn on an oven, being able to just cook, being able to just
use a door.
Was so, so scary and anxiety provoking.
That's crazy.
Because as a little boy, I had all of that done for me. And so I believe
the opportunity was wrong.
Exactly. And so it had to basically be expedited within literally a year. That now, you know, I've had to learn how to do the simplest thing, as even cooking, as even knowing how, you know, remember the true story. I was at the gym here and the door was, I was in the washroom. And I thought I locked it because I never used the kind of door you had where you twist it and it locks. So, Zach comes opening the door. He opens the door and I just finished taking a pee. And I was freaking out. I was freaking out because I was like, I thought I locked it because I pressed the middle thing in the button.
At a gym. Anybody else would have been very bad.
The thing that's hard is, hell is that, is I've had to be so vulnerable to do that. And it's been
to be able to admit, like, I've never done this.
Yeah, and it's so...
That's a door. This is a door, but I've never done it.
Never. And it is so hard because you get into this cycle of where you think you're an idiot. And you think you're stupid. And you think you're dumb. So in order to compensate for people not viewing you as stupid, idiot, or dumb, without knowing your background or story, you try to overcome that and be something more... when you're really not. And that's been, I think, arguably the hardest lesson I've had to learn recently within the last 3-4 months of going into my new role as what I am as a man, from where I was literally a year ago, where literally this time last year, I had no freaking clue on the littlest things that I was just robbed of through my youth.
Yeah. That's crazy too. And it's, you have such a very inspiring and very insane turnaround.
Thank
you. Like you said, just in the even last, 3 to 4 months max.
I really appreciate
that. The growth is so steep.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm like, I can't even keep track of it, dude.
It's crazy.
And even just a year ago, literally a year ago this time,
yeah,
right, you had just moved out.
Moved out of the garage.
Kind of see how everything is and how you develop is, it's two, you came to my place two separate people from who you were at the first Five Cent City, or even at the third when I heard you speak for like my first time meeting you. And then we have to just the last 8 months and then the last three. Like, dude, your short, like,
that.
Seasons of growth is just, you go through different charts. It's not even like one really steep line. It's like, oh, there's this season of Michael. Okay. This next season, let's see what he does from when the basketball season's over, like from April to October. Let's see what happens with Mike,
very true.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's the craziest, wildest thing, dude.
Well, that means a lot.
Dude, I'm, yeah, man.
I really appreciate that. And it's funny that you say that, because I think something as men that we have to do more too is, appreciate what we have done and what we do for others. And I will say for myself, even still, the biggest thing I struggle with is I have a very hard time recognizing how far I've come. And because of that, I put so much pressure on myself to be something more. And I'm learning more and more that all I really have is who I am now, and the rest will just continue to flow. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, kind of moving forward to a bit, both you can answer this, but we'll start with you, Michael. What kind of things do you do every day, or even every week or month? Do you have things that you do for taking care and looking after your own mental health?
That's a great question. And I think this is probably the most important thing, because this is tangible action steps that we do.
100%, yeah.
And you do.
And we talked, Zach talked about it earlier. Like, the biggest important thing both you guys touched on was you need to take action.
Yes.
We could talk about doing whatever. We could talk about jumping off whatever, running through whatever.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. Yeah, but what action steps you didn't take?
For sure. And I think that comes down to what you love.
Mm.
And so for myself, I can say the biggest things that I've adapted in my routines that help me stay accountable is, number one, involving myself into things that I absolutely love doing. So one, basketball. So something that I do to keep myself, first of all, sane, second of all, present, and third of all, happy, is I'll just go to the gym and I won't tell anyone. And I'll just put my headphones in and I'll play basketball for 2 hours straight. Form shooting, jump shots, whatever I need to do, and just zone out. And I think that everyone has their own way of doing that. And for me, that's what that is. And so, you know, my dream was, my first goal was I just wanted to play basketball for an hour with no pain. And now I work for a professional basketball team, you know, and sometimes I don't think of that. And so playing basketball and zoning out and being able to just play with no arthritis and play when guys and people around me are like, yo, you're good. Like, where have you played? Did you play in high school? And then I tell them a story about how I was dying in a hospital bed. And they're just like,
they don't believe you.
They don't believe me.
See, they can't.
And so, like, as far as like the self-care routine goes, I think having somewhere where you can totally zone out and just really involve yourself and adapt yourself in the moment is so crucial. And for me, that's basketball. And another thing that I think is super powerful is making sure that you have a pocket of time a day that you can just put aside to rest. And so for myself, what I adopted recently is, I remember I had all the time in the world to sleep. I had all the time in the world to chill. Now I'm so busy, I am in the cycle you've been in, where I used to make fun of you because I'm like, how do you have 4 monsters a day? You know? How do you...
We are trying to get that
sponsorship for the podcast. For real. Monster, right here. Anyways.
If I get sponsored, I'm dying, man.
Bro, but I used to think when I came up here, I was like, I'd watch all y'all, and it's like, okay, these guys have this, these guys do this, they're always doing this, they're always somewhere, and now that's me. And what I've learned recently is something that's been so powerful is being able to set aside 20 minutes a day, whether it be a power nap or whether it be a meditation. And within that 20-minute pocket, I'm able to regain energy and regain vitality that then I can take on to my next activity. And so I think the biggest two things that I take from my self-care routine is, number one, efficiency, and number two, happiness.
Mm.
And I believe when you can pair those two together, whether it be in the routines that you create within your own habits, I believe that's the thing that's going to really carry out your productivity and continue to force you towards the direction of where you want to go.
Mm. Nice.
I 100% agree with everything. I think I'm just going to try to add something, just a different kind of, not even take, but just, like,
yeah.
I'll just try to add to it a little bit. I do agree that everyone needs those that time,
yeah.
You know, and I think that's pretty, I think people understand that, and I think people get it. I think the hard part for a lot of people is that, again, it's like telling somebody that smoking is bad for them. It's just like, we get it,
yeah,
but we don't necessarily understand.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to be able, we've talked about it, to be able to take action, which is 100%, I think, the most important thing.
Huge.
Before any action can be taken, we need to have a general sense of direction.
Yep.
Mm.
Right? And I think sometimes people have it as, you know, they need to have like a set goal where they need to be like, I want to do this. You know, I need to make this much money.
Mm-hmm.
I need to play this sport professionally, or I need to have this many kids with a hot wife. And
yeah.
Like, we have these lists and these little like tasks or this little checkbox that we give ourselves of like, that's my end goal. And the reality is people that, especially people that are struggling and men that are struggling, we probably don't have that fucking list.
No.
We probably don't know what that actual list is.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would recommend is, if you don't feel like you have a list, I won't recommend go make a list.
No.
But when you sit around and you feel lonely or you're angry or you're resentful or you're sad or whatever emotion it is that you know just kind of gives you that feeling like you're uneasy.
Yeah.
It gives you some kind of like congestion in your chest where you're just like, ugh, I don't like this. What is something that makes that feeling go away? And I'm not talking about something that is like, oh, well, when I play my video games or I drink or drinks or I smoke my weed, I feel better. But like, what is something that gives you like some kind of light or something that you look forward to, right? Whether it is
basketball,
spending time with your kid playing basketball, maybe it's hanging out with your boys. Maybe there's this sport that you really like doing. Maybe there's people you really like being around that make that uneasiness fade away.
Yeah.
That's the start of your reason.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to spend, if you're spending 90% of your day or 95% of your day and you have that uneasy feeling, but that 5% of the day where you're actually like, oh, you know, this is tolerable.
Yeah.
That is your reason to start.
Yeah.
Your reason is, I want more of this feeling.
Yeah.
And that has to be the reason, and to start is going to be the reason as to why you take that 20 minutes for yourself or why you take up a sport.
100%.
Or why. It's because, you know what? The reason of like me feeling like this is more important to me and is worth that 20-minute meditation, or is worth going to the gym at 5 in the morning, or is worth maybe taking a day off, or is worth maybe giving back to someone. Like, everyone has different lessons they need to learn. But that's your reason. If you don't know what your reason is, it's like you have to make that feeling better than the feeling of that pit in your stomach and that gut.
Yeah.
Because that might be the only little light that you have at the end of the tunnel right now, and it's only by making that light a little bit of a priority will it start to open up, and you'll be able to see a little bit more clearly what those goals are.
That is
what
so,
is that list?
Yeah.
You know, what's that like? What's that check mark? What's the money I want to be making?
Mm-hmm.
What's the life I want to be living? What's the size of house I want to have? Like, whatever the goals are, whatever motivates you or bring you joy. If you don't have it, you need to prioritize, or you have to just think of it as like, is that feeling better and worth the uncomfortable feeling of having to do something for yourself, like that nap or like that workout? And that'll start to just be your reason. And over time, when you build it and you start to feel, you know what? I fucking really like this feeling.
Yeah.
And maybe it's only for 10% of the day that I feel like that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to prioritize that feeling. And that is the only reason that I'm going to do these meditations, is to feel like that a little bit more. It's the only reason I'm going to go work out, is to have that feeling a little bit more. Over time, within that light that you have in your day, things will start to become clearer.
That's so crucial. That's
it's just have a direction, right?
Yeah.
If you want to take action, you need to have a direction. no matter how small that direction might be, it might only feel like it's one step forward. But if that direction is like, you know what, I just got to take this one step, that'll make all the other bullshit that you might have to do to be able to take that one step,
yep,
make it worth it. Start with that one step.
You
might start to see the path clear up a little bit more once you've taken that first step.
It's really funny you brought that up, because usually that's the first thing I talk about. And lately, it's funny because, like, my reasoning has been changing a lot in my life. Whereas, like, my purpose... I've had a very big shift in my life when it comes to my beliefs, when it comes to my brother. You know, my biggest reason when I first left the hospital was, I'm doing it for him. Now it's like, okay, how am I going to evolve myself? Because it only goes so far when you're doing it for someone else, you know?
Motivation versus discipline.
Exactly. And I think you talking about that reason is so powerful, because even for me, like, when it came to the basketball thing, my basketball thing was my thing, you know? Like, my basketball was my reason. And I'm still doubling down on that reason today. So it always
it's different forms.
It's different forms.
And the way that you express it has evolved over time.
Exactly.
The way that you can perform it has evolved over time.
Exactly.
It's not just trying to get on the court.
No,
it's actually
not
being able to play. But yeah, it starts with that little tiny...
It'll keep
that
evolving.
Little tiny...
Yeah.
From that.
100%.
Yeah.
As you evolve, that goal will evolve. And it should.
Mm-hmm.
And you would want it to. It's what keeps life interesting.
Yeah.
It's the whole point. Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I hear that a lot, where people just feel like, well, like, I don't know any of my goals. I don't know what I want. It's like, but do you know one thing that's in front of you that makes you feel a little bit better? Do everything you can to have more of that one thing.
So it's funny you mentioned Zach, circling back to your 5 a.m. Comment, was there aren't many things that can really flusher me or anything.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of things that I do in my day-to-day, right? I'll try to fit in training. I'll try to fit in, like, videos, and then, like, oh, I want to read, but I also want to play guitar, but then I train, but then I have no time for friends.
Yeah.
But then, you know, how do I get this? How do I soak up as much of it as I can? It's like the actual life hack, especially as men, and I'm kind of going, you guys talked about right at the beginning. I'm going to talk about a bit after, once you kind of have established what that was, if once they're kind of putting together the pieces that you guys talked about. So a few steps after that, you kind of get into this space where you're trying to do all these things and you get overwhelmed, right? The biggest hack I found is time is actually fungible, if we think about it. So if you're, and I've used this example with an old business partner of mine about how he has kids and he doesn't have time to work out. Because, well, I don't want to work out at 10 o'clock at night when I put him in the kit. If we take I used to go to bed at like 11, 11:30. So let's say, just to make the argument, we'll say 11. And then, you know, I get home from training, let's tell at 8:30, whatever. I'm like, okay, from 8:30 to like 11, I'm like, well, I have to get ready and do all this stuff. So I'm like, okay. Well, what time do your kids go to bed? It's like, okay, well, they go to bed about 8:39. Like, for the sake of the conversation, do 9. So from 9 to 11, what are you doing? Oh, okay, well, I have to be up at 7. I'm like, okay, well, what if we took even just an hour of that time and we put it at the beginning of the day, 4 or 7? So from 6 to 7, 100% of the time, you will be more efficient, productive, and effective than you will be having that same exact hour doing whatever you're doing right before you go to bed. Yeah, man. Like, what are you doing usually from 10 to 11 or from 9 to 10? It's usually not as productive as what you're doing from 6 to 7 or 5 to 6, yeah, right? So I found a way to take all of that time, and I'll go to bed at 10 instead of 11, 11:30. Well, what do I do from that hour and a half? Well, I'll get my ass up at 5.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then from 5 to 5:15... I've already laid out all my stuff, right? So you have it figured out, and this doesn't even have to be for training. This could be for if you want to read, or a friend Joe does this, right? Where he'll study and stuff. Like, he'll get up before he needs, because that time, nobody's bothering you.
Yeah.
Nobody's texting you. Nobody's on the road at 5 a.m. It's my favorite thing. It's all green lights from my house to the gym, right?
Yeah.
But what's funny is some mornings, as I'm like leaving, or if I leave earlier, some mornings on a Friday, I'll pull my car through that parking lot across the street, and as I'm doing it, I look to my right and I see one car and a light on at this gym, and I know it's his ass working out.
I love it.
Right? Because months ago we talked about this, where it's like, that's the time that you have to fit that in, because that's priority. But that hour working out there is probably a lot better right before you see clients than doing it right before you go to bed.
Yeah, it's a it's smart, because it's like, you know, it's a way to kind of combine like that grind set mentality of like, you gotta work hard, while also being able to do it smarter.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, if you can just be more productive in a task in 1 hour, doing it right,
might as well.
Then it would take you 3 hours in a, you know, in the wrong state.
Like, like five to eight.
Well. Yeah,
and then, like everything else, like that'll catapult into everything else. Yeah, so that'll expand into this, like, that 1 hour that you now saved or that was still productive. Now all of a sudden it opens up 2 hours later on.
Right? Yeah.
So yeah, 100%, man. It's a really smart way of going about it. Is like, take your priorities and then fit in those priorities when it is the best time to accomplish them.
Yeah.
And that's where the discipline part comes in.
Yeah.
Is like, you might not want to do it at that time, but you know it's the most efficient, and you know that the reward you get from doing it is not just that you did the thing and you're like, oh, good, I got to work out.
Yeah.
It's also that at 10 o'clock at night, you get to spend time with your girl.
Exactly.
You get to spend time with your kids.
It'll pay off eventually.
You get to do that thing that
makes usually sooner than later. Yeah.
And it pays off.
It does pay off. And what's really cool about this little thing before we kind of come to the like concluding questions is, I want to really hammer this home. People say, like, oh, I get really bad sleep. Like, okay, no matter how you're going to sleep tonight, challenge anybody. Wake up at 5 tomorrow. And I guarantee, so say it's Saturday. Wake up at 5 a.m. on the Sunday. Go work out. I guarantee Sunday night, you won't have a problem falling asleep before 11.
Yeah, that's a good insight.
There's no way you can go the whole day and not be like, oh, man, I'm really tired.
Yeah.
Because your body can't be stressed and, like, tired at the same time, so you won't be really going to bed. Well, I'm yawning like 50 times at 9 o'clock, right? It's like, oh, I want to go to bed. I'll refuse sometimes to go out on a Saturday or on a Friday night because I was up at 5:30.
Yeah, of course.
Or up at five in the morning on Friday morning, and I'm like, well, I didn't nap, and couldn't make time to nap. So I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna be home before.
There's also something to be said about like better sleep when you feel like you've actually accomplished something.
Yeah, and you earn it.
Right.
Yeah,
it's
awesome.
Yeah, your brain kind of just is able to shut off and recognize, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Right.
There's nothing else I have to do.
And to your point too, that can kind of help us conclude that. But into the final kind of message, how would you kind of take what you just said, what we've talked about, as a final lesson, like that you would kind of message your piece, one like tidbit, short tidbit we can kind of leave.
I think
for the men out there,
I think the biggest thing as men that we need to do more of is, first of all, come together. Mm. And what I mean by that is, more than ever, there's division between all of us.
Yeah.
There's more division in between each other than there is connection ever. And that's not just on like a physicality level or an emotional level. That's on a social media level.
Mm-hmm.
That's on a day-to-day basis level, when we're just so used to being behind screens and all this stuff. And I think that the biggest way that we can utilize our mental health is to, number one, recognize.
Mm.
So recognize what we need to do to better that thing. Number two, take action.
Yeah.
And number three, have men around you or people around you that support you and love you and care for you to help you and step on your ass to get to that next level of your life. And I think that without that connection in between brotherhood and that connection within just daily civilization, we lack the necessity of what it means to be human in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think the more we can double down on that, the more we can actually evolve and achieve more great things as a unit, rather than trying to fight or be alone like we all know very well.
Yeah. Nice. Zach, do you have things you want to add or even your own?
Again, like, obviously, I fully agree with what Mikey said.
Yeah.
I think maybe just something to get people to think about a little bit is, like, and this is for men or women. This is for both.
Lovely.
A lot of times, people like to pretend like they don't have any issues, that their issues are not real issues. So I'm going to try to break it down as simply as I can in hopefully an expression that everyone, or in a metaphor that everyone can kind of relate to. Anxiety is that feeling you get when you've got a house full of people and they tell you to pick a movie to play for everyone. So now you gotta go on either Netflix or Amazon, or maybe you're on HBO.
Yeah, please, anybody.
And you gotta try to figure out, fuck, I gotta pick the right movie so that everybody likes me.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody ends up having
a great analogy.
That feeling that you just had of like, oh, fuck, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, that's a lot of
that
pressure.
That feeling is anxiety.
Put on a song.
That's anxiety.
That's a lot of pressure.
Depression is when you picked a movie and somebody gave you shit, or there was a consequence, or somebody told you it was a shit movie,
And now, all you can think about the next time you're hosting is that you fucking hope to God you are not the person who has to pick the movie again.
Damn. That's deep.
Right?
That's, yeah.
Those two feelings that everyone can relate to on a very small and insignificant scale.
Yeah.
When that feeling is amplified, that is what anxiety is. Mm-hmm. Is that choice of way too many options and not feeling like you are going to pick the right one for everyone.
Yeah.
And then the opposite end of that is you have made the wrong pick, or somebody made the wrong pick for you, and now you're feeling like you never want to make another pick again.
Wow.
That's depression.
Yeah.
Those two feelings, like we talked about, if they are just feelings throughout the day, you can work through them, you can progress, your life will go on.
Yeah.
When those feelings, either of those feelings, is sticky with you all day for long periods of time, you are in a state where your mental health is declining. Just like you would be in a state where your physical health would be declining if you were always in pain or if you were never exercising. It's the same thing. And the only way that it is going to get better is by first acknowledging that that's how you're feeling, by accepting that it's not going to be forever. Right? And then deciding what the fuck you're going to do about it. And move forward. And that's when all the things that we talked about, I think, come into play. Finding that light, finding something to drive you, whether no matter how small or insignificant it might seem to other people or to yourself, is like, if that's what makes you feel good right now, push and strive to have more of that. But if you're feeling like what I described, your mental health is potentially declining and is potentially at risk. I'm not saying it to be scary. I'm not saying it to frighten people, but that's the reality of it, is like, that's where you're at. And if it's there for too long, your body will start to show it first.
Your
eyes will start to sink. Your posture will start to slouch. Your chest, you'll have sensitivities to food. You might lose weight. You might gain weight. Right? You might lose an appetite. You might gain an appetite. But your body will start to change, and it'll start to feel different. And that is your first warning sign. That's your first trigger that something is off. So just be cautious of that. Because if you have those feelings, you are, like everybody else and every other human, you are at risk.
And develop that awareness. And when you have that awareness, don't hold on to it.
Absolutely.
Run with it. Yeah. Find somewhere to outlet it, you know?
Find people that can help you carry it with you. And it might be people that have carried that burden before. It might be people that have carried that feeling before. It might also just be people that are currently going through it. But together, your odds of being able to get through it are significantly higher than if you try to just take that shit alone. No matter how ashamed of it you might feel, I would rather have my friends or anyone feel guilty for asking for help, or feel angry that they're not capable of doing something, or feel jealous that somebody's doing better than them, than having them fall so deep that they are ashamed of who they are.
Wow. That's, and I think, too, something that could be a step of action for that, too, it's like just how we've all said about something that we all enjoy, is just like how you pointed out, find that one pocket, that one thing that gets you through the day. Find others who have that same pocket. You know, like for me, like I know, okay, I love basketball. I'm going to meet a lot of people who like
you
basketball.
You ain't out trying to meet volleyball players.
No, not that. I ain't trying to go golfing. I'm trying to hoop, you know? So where am I going to go? I'm not going to go to the golf course. I'm going to go to the basketball court. Anywhere I am.
And then it's also okay if somebody is looking for somebody to go golfing.
It is okay.
But I agree. And that's the thing, is like, everyone's going to have their thing. Find the people that share that thing.
Fully.
Amazing. So I kind of just want to say this. I fucking love you guys.
I love you too, man.
I love you guys, man.
And I love you.
You guys have inspired me, not even just today, but just countless times. You know, just kind of watching your example, watching how you handle things, how you manage your stresses, and how kind of life takes over, and you guys manage to bounce back. And even on top of all that, like how you guys help other people, even giving me, I know how busy you guys are. I know we've tried to set this up a few times, so I'm even extra grateful that we were able to make time today. You know, I know you guys, like, you have family, you have multiple jobs, like business, things you could be doing. So I really appreciate and love you guys for being here with me today. So thank you very much.
Thank you for giving this the opportunity.
I'm genuinely honored that you feel like that about us, because you've inspired us in so many ways. And for you to even feel like this is an opportunity that you created out of something, and you felt that we were the right fit to help make it happen.
It's an honor.
Honor.
It builds so much confidence within me too.
I love it, man. I appreciate it.
We love you too.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Let's end it. Drop the mic. All right.